and welcome to episode 331 of Awards Daily's Watercolor Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's plus a special guest. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Megan, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
Joey?
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And special guest?
Hi, I'm Shadon Larkey, and you can find me on Twitter at Shadon Larkey.
Welcome, Shadon.
Yay! Thank you for having me. I feel like I radiate such little sister energy that, like, when you guys ask me, yes, I get to, like, be on the group. Like, it's awesome. So I'm excited.
Well, we had Jordan on last week, so we're slowly making our way through the group at this point, I guess. We'll have to do another big one here in the future, probably closer to Emmy nominations. We did the last big one on the Emmy nominations and then the actual ceremony. So those were fun.
Yeah, those were a lot of fun.
All right. So this week we are going to dive into Barry Jenkins' Amazon Prime limited series, The Underground Railroad, which is, of course, based on the Pulitzer Prize winning novel by Shadon, help me out here, by Colton Whitehead. Whitehead, thank you. The name just completely jumped right out of my head at that very last minute. Thanks, brain. I love you so much. I'm going to stab you with a pencil.
That really went far. Don't beat yourself up.
Which dropped last Friday and over the weekend was quickly proclaimed many things, including an American masterpiece, and sent film Twitter into a spiral with its with their completely justified adoration of Barry Jenkins. So we want to talk about Underground Railroad, and each of us have seen at least one episode, some of us more than others. we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about whether or not it's the Emmy frontrunner. There's been a lot of dialogue also on Twitter this weekend about its place. Certainly, it seems like it's well positioned to win a few things and probably to get a massive haul just based on the crafts and the performances. But we're going to dive into that and see where we think it lands just even after 3 days. So, we will wrap this podcast, of course, with the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Excellent. So, Shadon, I know that you have read the novel, Colton Whitehead. Yes. And why don't you give us a 50,000 view description of what The Underground Railroad is?
Okay, so in the novel and in the world of the show, the Underground Railroad is a literal system of railroads and train cars that help, enslaved people escape to freedom. So the story follows this young slave girl named Cora as she's trying to, go through this railroad system and find her way to freedom. And she has, several people who help her along the way. And the main antagonist of the story is a slave catcher named Ridgway, played by Joel Edgerton, and sort of spliced in Cora's story is also the story of her mother, named Mabel, who, was able to escape before Cora, so we sort of find out what happened to her mom, and then there's these little, kind of standalone chapters and episodes that focus on some of the side characters that Cora meets, and she has sort of several romance or, love interests along the way. So, how did I do?
it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot to take in, and it's the way that it's structured. It feels very novelistic. Every episode is a chapter, essentially. I don't know if it does it align with the chapters in the book. I did get the book. I just haven't had a chance to read it yet.
They're kind of out of order, and they expand upon the world of the novel a lot because the novel is only 300 something pages. So this is 10 hours of TV. So there's definitely a lot of richness and world building that happens in the show that's not in the book.
Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways when I started watching the show, I was like, oh, Barry Jenkins is going for that Terrence Malick thing. Like he's got very lyric, sort of visual poetry going on, and then it's coupled with that Nicholas Britell score. It doesn't carry through the whole thing, but those first 5 minutes I thought were pretty stunning.
There were times when I was watching that I thought, I felt like it was 3D when it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like when, especially like the swamp, like it's just, it's gorgeously shot. And I was like, am I, like, I almost like, is it like coming at me? I don't know. I was struck by that.
Well, the way that like the camera moves, there's a lot of, you know, especially when it's, you know, just sort of establishing a lot of the space and sort of, you know, going, especially when it's outside, the camera moves like very slowly, like it sort of pans around. And I think you take in like a lot of nature and a lot of things that are outdoors. So I feel like there is that sort of connection to the earth and stuff, but that freaking score, I am obsessed with. Like, I'm obsessed with the music from this.
It is gorgeous. It is absolutely gorgeous. Of course, Nicholas Britell, who has worked on Barry Jenkins, many of his projects, including his gorgeous score for If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yes.
But Shadon, going back to you, I know you were one of the first of us to see it. What was your reaction to it? Have you watched the whole thing? You have, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think comparing it to Terrence Malick is a really good call. It's basically like poetry in a TV format. I mean, it's just beautiful. And I know, like, I don't know, sometimes I can tend to be a little hyperbolic, but I think in this case, calling it a masterpiece is completely like the correct call. It's just, I mean, it's just gorgeous and it's so rich and there's just so much to take in. And that's like my one sort of, you know, piece of advice. And I'm not a person of color. I'm sure, you know, there's people better than me to sort of dig into the themes. But the one thing that I will say is that it's not something that's bingeable. I mean, it is bingeable, but I would really recommend taking your time with it and really getting into the world, you know, like, and for this, I put down my phone. I was completely, you know, like, let it take me on that journey. And I mean, yeah, it's just completely immersive and just a really, really rich experience. So yeah, I think any and all praise that it is going to be getting is completely worth it. And I think this is going to be like a seminal miniseries that we will look back on 10 years later as like one of the all-time greats. I'm very confident in feeling that strongly about it.
Wow. One thing that I would say, and I, you know, I've never seen Roots or this.
Oh, really?
I did. Yeah, I've never seen the original Roots. I have seen a little bit of the sequel, but or the reimagining. But there's stuff in the first episode that almost kept me from watching the rest of it. Like the thing that pushed me through it was knowing that so many people whose opinions I respect did love this and had found a lot of things to praise about it. But that first episode is very, very tough, both in terms of the dialogue and in terms of the visual torture scenes. Like, it's almost borderline torture porn there.
I thought that too. But I think that this could be, I mean, I guess it'll stand, we'll see how it stands the test of time. Shadon, I love that you feel so strongly about it. That's great. I mean, I also agree with you about watching it one at a time, because I don't think this is like, let's binge it on a Friday night. Like, this isn't, I'm surprised so many people have binged it when it came out Friday. Like, really? Because it's that first episode is really hard to watch. And I do wonder, I know everybody's been saying, like, well, I mean, not to move into this conversation, but Emmy chances. But I do wonder if you watch that first episode and you're an Emmy voter, do you keep going? I just keep wondering. It's a hard. I was telling Joey, and I think I told Clarence this too. I got the same feeling watching it that I did with, well, after I Know This Much Is True, where, you know, that's a great limited series, but it was it's a downer, and it shows that people. Emmy voters, I mean, they only embraced Mark Ruffalo, and I just wonder if this is hitting at the same time that I Know This Much Is True did, I believe. And I just wonder if people are, you know, coming out of a pandemic, if they really want to sit down and watch this? I don't know. It was just something that I thought about. I mean, it's the high praise for it. I'm sure is justified. I mean, from the first episode, I can't speak to the other ones, but I just wonder about that.
No, Megan, I've had exactly those same concerns. And even for me, like when I mean, this has been my most anticipated show since I even heard that it was coming out. And Barry Jenkins, you know, I think it was a 4-year process of getting it to the screen. And I'd been waiting for it for so long. But even when I got the screeners, like I couldn't, you know, get through them very quickly. I had to take a lot of breaks. And that's definitely what I recommend for people watching. But I worry that we're in this age of binge watching everything. And how is this going to fare? You know what I mean? When there are so many more bingeable shows out right now, you know, are people going to give up on it? I would say it's worth pushing through. And it's worth sort of, you know, sitting with those tough images. Mm-hmm. And it's necessary. But I really do worry that, you know, if you're not a film Twitter person, if you're not, you know, like obsessed with Barry Jenkins the way that, you know, TV and film connoisseurs are, is this going to be the kind of thing that's going to connect for somebody who's just looking for something to watch like on a Friday, you know? So I definitely share those concerns.
I was shocked at how many people had actually, and somebody, I'm repeating something that somebody else has said, but I'm shocked at how many people had actually gotten to the end of it by Friday or Saturday morning. I mean, people were, I think on Saturday, I see people were tweeting about, oh, you know, episode 9 is a work of art.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, really? Like, did you literally just sit down and watch this nonstop? Like, don't you have lives or jobs or something? Like,
that's, yeah, I wonder, I kind of wish that they would have rolled this out one episode at a time. Yeah. I think Handmaids does a really good, like, Handmaids is kind of a torture porn type of show, I think. But they know that, I mean, I remember binging that show at some point and feeling sick to my stomach. Like, but they, you know, roll out one episode each and like each week. And I think that's really effective in, you know, they're able to tell, maybe they were kind of scared off with that first episode with Underground Railroad. I mean, maybe they were afraid people would quit watching it, but I kind of wonder why they didn't roll out one at a time instead of like, I mean, they're 10, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to roll out 10 all at once, like of a show that's like really intense.
Well, I think they wanted to get also, I mean, Amazon does that all the time. I don't think they do a show week to week, but I think they wanted to make okay. I think they wanted to position it so it was, the whole thing was eligible for Emmy.
Yeah.
I have seen 3 episodes and I feel like this show warrants a lot of patience and a lot of devotion to it. Like, I mean, I'll admit, like, I watch TV, you know, my phone's there. I'm not on my phone the whole time, obviously. I'm watching something, but it's sort of like, this is the type of show that I made sure that I paid attention to a lot of the details, because I feel like Barry Jenkins has put so much into every single effing frame of this show. And I am 3 episodes in and I'm really surprised as to where it's going. I just ordered the book because I need to read it now.
Wow.
I am... Yeah, I can read.
I did not know that.
There's, I don't know, by the end of episode 3, like, there's a lot of really good performances in here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, Lily Rabe is really good. I didn't feel like I forgot she was in this, or I didn't even know she was in this, because she popped up on screen. I was like, Lily Rabe! But, you know, the sort of sprawlingness to it, I feel like, needs sort of the respect of your time. And I do kind of think maybe if they did it week to week, that would have maybe downplayed the sort of overwhelming emotions that people are probably going to feel while they watch this show, or the really harsh violence. And because a lot of the violence is in there is really hard to watch, but yeah, I'm glad I'm taking my time with it. I don't think I could binge this show. I don't know how people are doing that.
Yeah, I echo Shadon. I I wouldn't advise that people do binge it because it's taken me. Well, I did start it. I did start it on Sunday, maybe Saturday. No, Sunday, and I'm three episodes in. So three episodes in a day, and I don't feel like overwhelmed. Now the first episode sort of, it has helped that the tone of the second and third episode is not as tough as of that first episode. That first episode, again, has a lot of harsh language and has obviously lots of whipping and a person burning alive. And it's the second and third do not have that. I mean, there is something does happen to people. So it's not like it's completely scot-free. But what I was really impressed by, and I'll try to keep spoilers out of it, Megan, because this is in the second episode, which you haven't seen. I was so impressed by Barry Jenkins' directorial style in that second episode, where there is a place that two characters go, Caesar and Cora. And
that's a good episode.
Yes, they live in this. They do to take into this town, which they feel is a sense of freedom, and it's. You know, they feel sheltered and they start to let their guard down, not too much, but maybe just a little bit. And then you start to find out that some things are not what they appear. And just the tension that he builds through that episode, I think, is just masterful. Like it's just that episode was just absolutely the best thing I've seen so far. I was a little less taken with the North Carolina episode, ironically.
Says the North Carolina resident.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed a little less focused to me, especially coming off of that second episode, which was so tight and so just the tension that he was able to elicit from every scene just blew me away. This one was more traditional in terms of, you know, here's a hate Lily Rob plays a hateful person who slaps her, and it's more traditional in terms of this is what we expect from a film of this subject matter. But it's still good. It's just I didn't think it was as good as the second episode.
Can I say something about the way that that I, you know, since I haven't read the book yet, it's structured from the novel. Like I was, as soon as I saw it in whatever episode we first started seeing, I was like, what SOB is gonna you know, imagine like actual trains and stuff running underneath the ground? Like what?
I was worried about that too.
I think some people are gonna have questions.
Well, it's if you go on, I don't know if any of you have gone to hateful sites like Rotten Tomatoes or even on the.
I didn't know where you were going with that. Go to hateful site. I'm not going on the dark web, Clarence.
Like, I know.
Like the Rotten Tomatoes fan or the user reviews page or the Amazon user reviews of this, it's getting massively attacked by people who are. There's some people who have legitimate opinions. They're like, this is not history. This is going to confuse people. I don't appreciate the way that the story is told. And it is a choice, right? It's a style. It's the way the book was written. It's a fictionalized version of this story. And, you know, I can understand why they would include it as an underground. It did elicit all kinds of completely random and pointless questions in my head. Like, how did they build it? How did they not hear it running? Yeah. How does the train turn around?
And it did make me question myself for a second, like, wait a minute, this is not real, right? Like, I did have to stop and be like, no, this was not my understanding. Like, did I forget? Like, my fifth grade self was, like, freaking out.
Yeah, but there's a lot of racist people out there who are downgrading it as well. So that's
what I think. I mean, I think that that's what makes it special is that it's not just a straight up,
right.
You know, yeah. Like, there's so much imagination to it. And I will say, like, for all of the, I would call it torture porn at the beginning, there's a lot of sort of moments of joy and moments of wonder that take place later in the series. And I think it like speaks especially to like Black creativity, the idea that they were able to, you know, build this literal railroad. Like, I don't know. I think that that's, the grandness of it. I mean, just the production design, speaking of like the Emmys and things. So like, I don't know. I think so that, good. I would definitely say like that was one of my my favorite parts of it, the sort of magical realism of it.
Yeah. I once I got accustomed to the fact that this is what the style was, it's totally fine. I mean, yes, it looks great. It makes for a really interesting set when you see a train running underground like that. Yes, the production design is fantastic.
And sort of like God forbid we sort of, you know, take a little, you know, take a story that we've seen in countless other, you know, movies and TV shows, and we you know, add an element to it that, you know, changes our perspective a little bit. Like the people that are complaining about it on Hateful Sites, like Rotten Tomatoes user, like people, they just like, calm down. Like, can you stretch your imagination just a little bit? Like, God forbid we have, you know, some creativity infused to a story that we think that we know. So whatever.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that Colton Whitehead chose that way, because it does make sense visually once you think about it, when it's not all of a sudden just a person being carried in a wagon across state lines, which is probably more like what really happened, and it gives it a different visual flair.
Shadon, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So I assume, did you read the book just like, you know, was this something you had previously read, or did you read it because you knew Barry Jenkins was doing it?
I read it when they, like, announced that it was happening. Uh-huh. So I kind of, like, pictured it in my head, like, as I was reading it. And it, yeah, like, turned out, you know, beyond what you can picture. I think that that's what's so impressed about, like, again, like, the scale of it. And I will say, I was at this press event with Barry Jenkins where he was talking about when he was a kid, he thought that the Underground Railroad was, like, an actual place, you know, like, when he was first told about it when he was a kid. And that was why he wanted to do it, because he liked the idea of, you know, putting this, like, thing into the world that was, again, speaks to, like, you know, imagine what Black people could do if they were given the opportunity. And I think it speaks a lot to, like, yeah, like, their experience. And the same thing with, like, the whole North Carolina episode, or even the other one where it's like, you never really feel safe. And I think it has a lot of interesting things to say culturally, is my point. Which again, that's why I can just not say enough, like, stick with it. Cause it's not as, like, once you get past that, there's still a lot of heartbreak and a lot of really sad and awful things that happen, but there's also a lot of moments of joy and beauty. And, like, as a collective whole, there's more to it than just that first episode.
Sure. So we kind of danced around the topic, but you know, let's talk a little bit more about where we think it lands with the Emmys. Now, of course, all year it's been all about The Queen's Gambit and Anya Taylor-Joy. Clearly, this is going to get nominated for limited series, I would think. And probably lead with most nominations, I would imagine, as well, just because of the crafts. Where I'm kind of questioning is the performances. Like, are there enough performances there to get sort of those nominations that maybe something like Watchmen had last year?
I think Joel Edgerton has a good chance of getting in there. I think
they put him in lead.
Oh, they did? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I'm going to look up the young man's name. The character who I am very intrigued by throughout this whole show so far is played by Chase Dillon, character of Homer. That little kid. There's so much there to just unpack with just his character. I don't know. I would sort of, he really sticks out to me every single time he's on screen. So I think it'd be sort of cool if he got a nomination personally.
Yes, he is totally evil and very interesting and kind of weird to see this, you know, what is he, 8 or 9, something like that, 9 or 10, a very young child dressed up like a little man with a little suit on, but he's basically a slave catcher.
Wow.
Which is an interesting, very interesting dichotomy there. Where do we stand on Thuso Mebidu, who plays Korra?
Oh, she's so good. I mean, she's definitely, she's definitely getting in for a nomination. I would need to look at other year just to get a little like historical comparisons. I wonder if there has been another show like The Queen's Gambit that has swept pretty much every single other award show that there has been, and then it loses at the Emmys. Now I could see a scenario where like the show wins series and
Barry Which Jenkins, show?
Oh, I'm sorry, Underground Railroad. I think Underground Railroad could win, you know, series, director, you know, a handful of crafts, but maybe loses actress just because, you know, the Emmys tend to, you know, sometimes spread stuff around, and I feel like the strength of the Queen's Gambit would maybe just come down to Anya Taylor-Joy. So I feel like if it comes down to Underground Railroad sweeping everything, and they're like, oh, we're going to give Queen's Gambit something, I imagine they would give it to Anya Taylor-Joy. But, you know, Thuso in this is sort of, she's great. She's so good.
And also, I would not count out Kate Winslet in Mayor of Easttown. She is coming on very, very strong after episode number 5, which is the last one that was the one that aired this weekend. I feel like everybody was talking about that on Twitter today.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny because everybody was talking about Underground Railroad for a while, and now everybody's talking about Mayor of Easttown. So it's just, it turns on a dime. But I definitely wouldn't count her out because I'm seeing a lot of people, film Twitter and actual actors, tweet that she is basically reinventing acting with this performance, which I think is a bit of a hyperbole, but she is great in it. Shadon, what do you think about Thuso Mebidu? I'm just going to keep saying that name until I get it right.
Isn't it Mbedu?
Mbedu, okay.
It's hard because, I don't know. I'm not as high on Mayor of Easttown as you know, I think a lot of the praise for it is a little bit hyperbolic, but I don't know. I think one of the good things, again, about that weekly release schedule is that it sustains buzz. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know, like, if you have Kate Winslet, you know, I don't know, potentially you have Elizabeth Olsen and Michaela Cole, like these performances that have sustained buzz, and then you have somebody like Thuso, is she going to have the, I don't know, star power or the kind of thing to win with all those different bigger names? I don't know. I'm also wondering if maybe because lead actor is a little bit less competitive, if maybe Joel Edgerton could win. I don't know. It's hard because I don't know if, and this is something we've talked about, like, is this something that they're going to like vote for without even seeing? I think Thuso, like, she would be like the worthy winner just because, like, just what she does is so good. And I think because you don't know her from other things, it's like so easy to, like, she just gets completely, she is that character, and the performances is really, you know, riveting. And then when you see her, not that I've seen her in person, but when you see her in person, she's like totally different, and it really speaks to like how completely she was able to transform herself. But yeah, I have no idea. Like, if you would have asked me a week ago, I would have said yes, but just with all the buzz with the Mayor of Easttown, I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, and with Best Actor, I mean, I think that's so. We're not talking about this now, but the Netflix limited series Halston also dropped this weekend, which is not very good. But
oh, really?
No.
I haven't seen it.
No,
it's incredibly it's shockingly by the numbers.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's almost like Ryan Murphy just basically put his name on something that was already made. Just to
well, he didn't. I mean, he didn't direct any of it.
He didn't direct anything. He didn't write anything. So
I think it was actually the one, I'd never say this. I think I said this to Clarence. I was like, it's the one show where I could have used a little bit more of Ryan Murphy in it. So
That's pretty funny.
But Ewan McGregor is great in it, I think. It's all about him, and he's going to be strong.
I think him and Krista Rodriguez are the only things, although she doesn't stick around as much as you would think.
No.
Throughout the whole thing. I don't know. I go back and forth sometimes, sort of pointing what Shadon was saying about, you know, we don't know Thuso. This is like her first like big show, her first big huge performance. But I feel like, you know, I mean, it's, she's working with Barry Jenkins. I think Jordan said something last time he was on that, you know, Barry Jenkins gets actors awards, which is his, you know, it's pretty much true. He basically, I mean, he got Gina King an Oscar. He got Mahershala Ali an Oscar. So this is like the type of show that I assume actors are going to respond to. But I wonder sometimes if with the Emmys, if they would, you know, just pick off famous names sometimes, although they didn't do that with, I mean, Shira Haas was nominated last year. So
yeah,
I was going to say the only difference between Barry Jenkins with those scenarios of Mahershala Ali and Regina King is that they were kind of established actors and Thisu I'm going to screw it up now. Thisu is still up and coming. And so I think that's kind of the difference there. I personally don't know if I think we're as hyperbolic as we are about Mayor of Easttown. I think maybe in some ways we are about the Emmy chances of this show. I think it needs to like simmer for a little bit to see what happens, because I could see something like this being like, oh, we're talking about it and then we've moved on. And I don't know how that's going to be. So that's my opinion on it is we have to wait and see a little bit to see. I mean, I think that Emmy race with the women is so crowded, like lead actress, limited series. So, I mean, someone's going to fall out. I don't know who it is, but it's hard to say she's going to get in for sure because there's so many.
I actually got like, I saw somebody tweet something today. They're like, oh my God, guys, best actress in limited series. It's so stacked this year. I was like, bitch, it's stacked every year. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. One thing that I will, I mean, it's not just me, but like it's out in the world. I'm not going to take credit for it, but Sheila Achim, the actress who plays Mabel, Cora's mom, she, I mean, episode 9 is basically all her, I think 9 or 9. And her performance is amazing. So she could be a very, very strong play in supporting actress. Again, kind of the same thing with Thuso. She's not a name, but I mean, she's just undeniable. So it is possible that it could break through in that race. With the supporting actors, there are many being campaigned for supporting actors. So I don't know if they're going to potentially cancel each other out. But I think she could be a very strong play as well because she's a major presence throughout the show.
Yeah. And I was, I'm actually as great as, Lily Robb is in that third episode. I'm assuming that's her only episode. Is that right, Shadon?
Yes. Yeah. I think she briefly shows up in 4, but then you don't see her again.
Right. So, you know, there's just not enough material there, I think, to warrant a nomination. It's possible, but because she's great, but it's just going to be tough. It's going to be tough because you've got Jean Smart from Mayor of Easttown. Who's going to get 2 nominations this year? So I don't have the list of contenders, but, you know, I think 2 to 3 acting nominations and then a boatload of crafts. The sound of the whipping. Oh my God. It's just like, every time it hit, I jumped.
Even, I mean, the sound design sort of across the board, like when there's sort of like when I can't remember what episode it is, but there's like an episode and I'm sure it goes on in other episodes too, where they're outside and sort of just hearing the sounds outside, and the way that it's layered to sort of give a depth of, you know, how close and how far things away, just hearing like the crickets going, and you know, you can hear like maybe a dog barking in the distance. I feel like the sound in the show is kind of insane. And also like the music supervision is also really good too.
Yeah, the end titles have the most interesting songs. Yeah, that's like a whole, I could use like a whole like side podcast or something with Barry where he just talks about like different songs, because they're chosen so meticulously. Like going back to what you said, Joey, like every choice in this show is like made for a reason. Like, so the way that it all comes together is just beautiful, because it's so like deliberate.
Yes, and I want to get back to that actress conversation and close out one thing. Someone said it, you know, I don't know who gets left out. Elizabeth Olsen, that's who gets. And that's coming from somebody who liked WandaVision quite a bit. She can't compete. She can't compete against those other powerhouse performances.
I'm a little shocked by how much everyone is saying, how
she's a lot
confident they are. Just because I feel like they're still, like, even though we have shows like The Mandalorian that got in, and we have shows like Watchmen, for instance, which is based on a graphic novel. I mean, I feel like there's still a little bit of genre bias there. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like, you know, crafts aside and stuff, because I think like they're really going to hammer home the way they did like the visual effects and did like old school VFX for that show, and the crafts, like the costumes and everything. I'm just a little surprised that people think that voters aren't going to think, oh, it's just a superhero show. But maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know.
Yeah, when you look at the actresses that have been tossed around, including Winslet and Thuso and Anya Taylor-Joy and Cynthia Erivo for Aretha, that's a tough, tough crowd to break into.
Yeah, I don't have her in my five right now, but I don't know, I think that because WandaVision has surprisingly been able to sustain buzz as long as it has, and because Disney did such a good job campaigning for The Mandalorian, like, I don't think it's, like, impossible, but yeah, I would definitely agree, I'm not as confident as everyone else, because I do think that genre bias is still, but she's definitely worthy, like, when you're talking about great performances, that's why it's so hard, and that's why they need to expand the category for the 100,000.
I mean, you know, maybe this is sort of, I don't know, maybe because WandaVision was another show that built a lot of buzz week to week, you know, and I know this is not a very well reviewed show, but The Undoing did that. The Undoing, which had a big guild presence leading up to, you know, the break before, you know, basically the new year, it was hitting surprisingly consistently, you know, and it has all those big name stars. I don't think it's as, you know, I think Mayor of Easttown has ever taken that buzz, but I feel like that's a show where they're like, Twitter blew up every week when that show was on, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because Matt Shackman did get in at the DGA this year, so it is respected in the industry. I just see it as a crafts thing and a direction. I can see it as a direction, but I just the performances. I don't know, outside of Catherine Hahn, who I feel just got so much buzz that she probably is a lock. And the song, right? The song's gonna do it.
Jesus Christ.
It's tough. It's tough to see it get in the Best Actress. Anyway, we will talk about that on a different podcast. So is there anything else that we wanted to say about Underground Railroad?
I just think people need to, I think maybe this is sort of echoing what Shadon said, that was just sort of like, you need to sort of stay with it. I think the artistry is really worth your time and attention. This is, you know, I haven't seen the whole thing, so I'm definitely very hooked, but I feel like, you know, we're in Emmy season right now, we're trying to watch a billion things and catch up with a lot of stuff, but I know that that's a show that I'm not going to be kind of flippant about. Like, I'm going to make sure that I'm not just watching it just to watch it. So,
right.
Prestige television.
Excellent. Does that do it?
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the flash forward to the media that we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Shadan, we'll hand it off to you.
So I was very much looking to forward to Halston before the podcast. Sorry
about that.
That was going to be on my list. I love like any show that has over the top fashion. So I'm still going to watch it.
Just watch it then.
Yeah. And then Ewan McGregor I love. So Halston's definitely on my list. I need to watch Chad. I feel like a bad person because I haven't seen it. So I'm going to watch that in honor of Megan. And then I need to finish the rest of Girls 5 Ever. I've seen the first 4 episodes, so I'm going to finish that up this week.
Excellent.
I need to finish that too.
I need to watch this week Master of None Season 3 drops. I was a big fan of the first 2 seasons, and then, you know, stuff. So that I need to watch because I have screeners for that. But the show that I'm most looking forward to is Special Season 2, which drops on Thursday, I think, on Netflix. Ryan O'Connell was nominated for an Emmy last year in the short form categories. It's a very cute show about a gay guy trying to navigate the scene in LA while coming to terms with his cerebral palsy. So the second season is the last season, unfortunately. But I've seen the first 2 episodes and it's really good. And they've expanded the episodes from like 15 minutes to like a fuller episodes. And it's really good. It's just a really cute show and a different perspective that we haven't really seen before. No one else is doing it. And Ryan O'Connell is adorable. Call me Ryan O'Connell.
All right, Megan.
Well, I'm excited for new mayor of Easttown. I will watch more Underground Railroad a little bit at a time. What else am I? I just am trying to watch a lot of things for. I just finished Industry, by the way, and that's great. That's a fantastic show. And I just talked to the creators today, and they were. It was a really interesting conversation, but just doing a lot of writing. And I want to finish The Woman in the Window, which I didn't hate so far. I thought it was kind of fun. I was just halfway through.
Oh, we need to talk about that.
Wait till the end. The ending is where it falls apart.
Okay. That's probably about it for now.
Awesome. I was surprised at how much I didn't mind Woman in the Window, considering the toxic buzz that it had, but until I got to the 45 minute mark, maybe, or the hour mark, and it was.
It starts to get really fast. I feel like
it does.
The pacing of the book was very slow, and then it's like, let's just speed this up and get to the end.
Yeah.
Oh, but I forgot to mention that All Stars, the challenge All Stars, I think they're heading into their final now. So I'm excited about that. And, of course, Floor of Vamashore.
Megan, you did read The Woman in the Window, right?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, see, what I don't understand is, like, that book is super campy. So I just don't understand somebody being like, let's make this into a prestige, like, Oscar-y drama.
Don't you remember, like, when people started getting announced for that? And you're just like, Joe Wright.
Yeah.
Like, Tracy. It was, and you're like,
I didn't know
Tracy
the book was campy
Letts.
Until I read it. And I was like, oh.
It's like a fun trash book. I love
it. Yeah. Shocked from the beginning. Like, just like you're saying, Joey, when I was like, all these people for that book? So all these people are like shocked that it turned out bad. And I'm like,
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a long history of campy, trashy novels getting adapted into prestige. Like, it's the first thing that comes to mind is Disclosure from that movie in the 90s with Demi Moore and Michael Douglas.
Oh, God.
I mean, I'd love to go back and we should do a podcast about that movie and see
I just watched that recently, actually.
Can we do a podcast about erotic thrillers of the 90s?
Jade.
I need to watch Galaxy Quest because they did a podcast about it on Unspooled. And I had seen it 20 years ago, but I have not seen it since. And I feel like that's probably worth a revisit. too. Yeah. Unrelated to Disclosure.
But yes, aren't they doing a TV show for that?
They were, but it was shelved, and Paul Scheer was going to write it, and that they kind of talk about that a little bit too. Well, Joey, I'm surprised you're not excited that Black Monday's coming back.
I thought that came back later in the month.
I thought it was coming back like Monday.
Oh, I have the screeners of the first two episodes. I love. Is it? Oh my god!
It's Black Monday, May 23rd.
Oh, yep. Okay. So preview to next week.
No, it's next Sunday, right? Yeah, next Sunday.
Oh, okay. Then yes, I'm looking forward to season 3, Black Monday on Showtime.
I have screeners to watch or to shows to catch up on for interviews. So I'll be binging a lot of Mythic Quest because Apple wants me to talk to the entire cast, and that is exhausting. I will be continuing to watch Underground Railroad. But two things. I think that this is a TV movie, but I'm not 100% sure, but the description of it and the cast compels me to watch it, which is, it's called The Bite. It is on Spectrum Originals. It is a zombie comedy. It's a series. Sorry, it's a comedy series about the zombie apocalypse starring Taylor Schilling and Audra McDonald.
I
did hear about
there.
This. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I want to talk to Audra McDonald about this show. Oh, my God. I'm, like, feverishly, like, trying to type it in. Like, what's The Bite?
I love her. So that sounds very interesting. I would not know how you watch a Spectrum original show, but I will find out.
You can watch it.
And audiobooks. I recently bought, I think, can't remember if I mentioned this last week, but I bought Mike Nichols' A Life by Mark Harris. And I am well into that. And it is brilliant. And it's fascinating. And I absolutely love it. So I would highly recommend. It's long. It's like 20 hours on audiobook. But well worth it because Mike Nichols did a lot.
Oh. Quick audiobook recommendation from 2 years ago at this point, but The Dutch House by Ann Patchett, as narrated by Tom Hanks. It's lovely. It's like America's dad, like reading you to sleep at night. That's highly recommend.
What's it called again?
The Dutch House.
The Dutch House. Okay. Dutch House. I'll have to remember that. Yeah.
Looking it up. Oh, I remember seeing that cover.
All right, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3Ms, contributors Megan McLaughlin, Joey Moser, and me, Clarence Moy, plus special guest Shadon Larkey, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.